Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Treehouse, episode 20, Lord Waxworth's Big Idea, with Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
It's a terrible thing to do, come on laughing at the only scripted part of the show, but very good morning to everybody. Here we go again, another 2 hours of fun for old and young, without the slightest hint of vulgarity, but I assume one or two are long-time listeners of the various places I've pitched the tent, and Lord Waxworth, even you, that was the first...
First thing you had me say on air.
How about that?
In one of your many, many shows.
Yeah, we need memory.
Peps, come in here, yeah. Say this. And it was, why, Lord Waxworth?
Well, what we tried to do, we begin the show in a minute, if you've never heard this before, go back a couple and you kind of, well, it doesn't matter. And we tried to write, line by line, an entire film on the air. And I remember it used to begin, because I had some... I haven't got that kind of music, but I have. If I had this thing, it started like this thing. This sort of thing. The beginning of the film. And then no words. And a caption would come up. London, 1894. A small red sports car makes its way across the South Downs. Inside the ball, two people are meeting for the first time, and then you had to say,
why, Lord Waxworth? And I can't remember the rest of the sentence.
And that's as far as we got. That was as far as we got. So, and I mean this in the kind of...
He's back.
I mean this because this start of the show is fine, but we seem to be indulging ourselves. So what we're going to do, and this is... Start it again.
Okay.
And don't worry, I'm not really starting it again. Leave all this in. Off you go, Peps.
The Treehouse, episode 20, Lord Waxworth's Big Idea, with Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
See, that's the thing. If I might just, if anyone's thinking, you know, it seems like falling off a log doing a podcast. It is. And you're just fooling around in a radio studio. Just fooling around. Nothing matters. Nothing matters. You hear some of these, and I'm not necessarily pointing a finger at the Fred and Rose West tapes here, but that you'd think they were creating for the ages. Quiet, please. Bells go in studios, people run around with furrowed brows. We are making a podcast. Anyway, very good welcome to you, everybody. That's Louise Pepper on the other side of the table. As usual, we try and, at the beginning of the show, like there's a middle and an end, we try and shine.
Historically topical.
Historically, that's it. That's exactly what it is. There you go. If anyone wants to write the second line of Lord Waxworth's introduction, then by all means do that. So today was the very first US opera, the very first opera performed in the US in 1735.
Okay. All right.
And I've never heard of it. It was called The Hob in the Well, right?
The Hob?
I don't think Americans are necessarily... you've got your jazz and your blues, yeah. Mm. You've got your rock and roll up to a point and your musicals. But I don't think opera was ever their forte.
No. Hob in the Well.
The Hob in the Well. And I looked it up.
Yes.
And a précis of the storyline, according to Wikipedia, is Tom Testy keeps his heiress niece Flora locked up, but Flora wants to marry Tom Friendly. Now,
all the names, could they Tom, not have got Tom and John? Why do they have to be Tom?
Tom Testy and Tom Friendly. The bad is Tom Testy and the...
It's like a Men book.
They're nicking a living, aren't they? They are nicking a living. I mean, I know they only had 13 colonies to amuse, but... Never, come on.
Mr. Men the Opera.
Yes, exactly. And that went out as, you know, it was written by Neely Bruce. He was the second person I've ever heard called Neely. N-E-E-L-Y. Neely Bruce. The other one was Anthony Newley's sometimes collaborator, Neely Plum.
Neely Plum. I thought you were going to say Anthony Newley's child, like Neely Newley.
No, no. Just... Bravo, Pep. Man, you're on fire today. Absolutely Neely Newley.
A Neely Newley production.
This level of humour should not be amusing us quite as much. But Neely Plum might have married Tony Newley and Neely Newley. Well, that's enough entertainment. We'll see you on Saturday. Oh, man. So, also, by the way, Marcel Duchamp's new Descending a Staircase was unveiled in public for the first time in 1913, I think. Have you ever seen Nude on a Staircase?
No. Duchamp is the one that said things that, like... Oh, no, I'm thinking of Magritte, aren't I? Who's Cécile Nepo? Oh,
look at me trying to hang in there. Yep. Yeah. A lot of people confuse those two. No, this is a...
No, I have not seen the nude coming down the staircase.
Well,
I've seen nude on a tennis court.
Do yourself a favour. Pause the podcast, everyone here, and go and have a look at it if you don't know what it is. It looks like... Have a look, Peps. And see if it should be called, actually, a load of old lumber falling down a lift shaft. I've got to say, I was a little disappointed.
Nude Descending.
I thought it might be a little bit racy.
Staircase.
Nude Descending Staircase. Have a look. You think you...
That's a wood carving.
It's a load of lumber falling down a lift shaft. It ill behooves this show to suddenly thumb its nose at Marcel Duchamp, I know. But anyway, the two big things, and the show... What were your emails here? The show...
What? In full armour or something?
I don't know.
Nude,
No, it's not a nude, is it? If you took that photo, you'd say, what's the matter with his camera? He's done the image about 35 times. I know one is supposed to walk around it tapping your teeth with a pencil and saying, ah, but it got me this morning. I can think of at least one thing wrong with nude descending a staircase. So none of this should detain us. Two things in the skies today. Right. So two things in the skies. Okay. And I'm not saying this just to be cutesy pie. Elm Farm Ollie, right? In 1930, Elm Farm Ollie became the first cow to fly a plane. To fly in a plane, right? In a plane. Didn't fly the plane. But it was also known as Nellie J, the cow, which sounds like a contemporary singer.
This is terribly confusing to a cow.
I know. But you'd think this is just too small for... You know, but you look it up, it's a hugely famous thing in America. They took Elm Farm Ollie up in the first flight for a cow.
Right.
And she also became the first cow to be milked on a flight.
We
got her up here. Elmsworth W. Bunce became the first person to milk a cow. It was all happening on this day. The milk was then sealed into paper containers and parachuted to people below.
Oh, now that, I mean, I'm there for
We
that.
Think we're so way ahead now. They're way ahead back then. Yeah, you can have all your Brit awards you want. You're not taking a cow up and parachuting
Amazon
milk now.
Amazon wants in on this.
But imagine, what else would... Little parachutes to send it down to people. For what end, we don't know. But if you think this is, you know, just a nonsense story, you have a look how famous Elm Farm Ollie... The first cow, possibly the last cow to be in a plane. Elm Farm Ollie. But all of this... drop of tea. All of this... sometimes I just think we'd let the Steely Dan thing play and give people a break. So all of this is leading up to the one big thing today, which is when Pluto was discovered. Dear old Pluto. I know. We all feel for Pluto, don't we? Because what happened there, and they took away the... It took away its licence.
Yeah.
It took away its liquor licence or something. Pluto's actual full name, 134340 Pluto. It's got a full... It is. That's its full name. 134340 Pluto, sir. And it's always a beautiful thing, I think, Pluto. And they took away its licence. Five moons, Charon, Styx, Nix, Kerberos and Hydra.
So it's doing better than us.
Doing a lot better than us. It was nearly called Atlas.
Oh, that would have been...
Atlas. And then Zeus. Mm. And then, right up until the last minute, it was going to be called Percival.
Oh, no, I
Planet Percival. Like
that.
Percival.
No, Saturn.
So, but then Venetia Burney, in a competition, called it Pluto. And exactly the same year, Pluto turned up in Disney. There is some debate about what came first. Disney said nothing to do with the planet. But the planet, did they see the Pluto? Venetia, she was 11 years old. Don't tell me she really named it after an underworld god. She didn't do that. She told her dad that, but she'd been to flicks and seen it. Anyway, that was in 1930. And I'll put this, and I promise, then the show starts. I don't think I'll find anyone to argue with this. I think Pluto is the weakest of all the Disney characters. You see a Pluto film, it's very thin. It's very thin. The fellas really didn't knock himself out with Pluto films. There's nothing... there's the confusion with him and Goofy, of course.
Yeah, I was about to say...
Because he owns Goofy and... Goofy owns him, but
he's more of a pet than an actual.
There's nothing in it.
Character.
Very, very thin. He doesn't speak. He doesn't walk upright. He doesn't wear clothing. And all cartoon characters wear at least one piece of clothing. Pixie and Dixie. Do you know who Pixie and Dixie are?
No.
Pixie and Dixie. They were very much the Harry Potter of their day.
Oh, okay.
That may be over-aggrandizing. Pixie and Dixie. There were two cartoon mice. One wore a collar and tie, and the other wore a waistcoat. A little waistcoat. Nice. And that's how you knew Pixie from Dixie. Don't ask me. But Pixie and Dixie, top cap or a top hat.
Yes.
And he wears a waistcoat, doesn't he?
Yeah, does he have a bow tie as well, actually?
No, he wears a long tie.
Yes,
right. A proper tie. And you know, some are Secret Squirrel, you can barely see him. But Pluto doesn't have clothes at all. At all.
No, because he's a pet, isn't he, basically?
Yeah, but he's
an adjunct.
That's an interesting psychological slant on the thing, but he's still a cartoon character. He's too sensible. He wears a collar, you know. Chip and Dale. Do Chip and Dale wear clothes? I think they do.
On occasion, I think.
Anyway.
Definitely when they're rescue rangers.
And just in to tidy it up here. So Pluto, which is mainly made of methane. Ooh. And methane was discovered on this day by Alessandro Giuseppe Antonio Anastasio Volta, who later went on to do electricity.
Well.
Yeah, that's why you have volts.
Starting methane.
It. He started methane, and then...
Which
cows emit, thank you very much. Yeah, so they do, so they do. Well, and so, as any dog owner will tell you, so do dogs, Goofy and Pluto. But, and he also invented the battery, really. Do you know how batteries work? I have no idea how batteries work.
There's acid in there, that's all I can tell you.
Is there? Oh, no, battery acid.
Battery acid, isn't
but
it?
Little batteries.
Oh, right. Don't they have...
How does that work? You put it in the, you know, your Walkman, and it goes, and then it stops going. So, but what's going on in there? Because you've got your AA battery.
Mm.
I think there's a triple
AAA. Yeah, they're the little ones.
And then it goes straight to D, doesn't it? Is there a B battery? I don't know.
D ones are the squarish.
You can't always get them.
I can't believe it.
Because they have that kind of flower thing on the top, not an actual,
yes,
don't they? They have that.
Yeah.
I think that's all we've got time for this week. I do apologise, everyone, but Peps and I don't see each other between shows. You can go and listen to the Fred and Rose West tapes if this is all too lightweight for you. What are we doing this morning, Peps?
Number one, the most peculiar thing you've seen in a theatre or cinema. Sorry, I haven't...
Got a belter on that. Got an absolute belter coming up on that.
Number two, riding in unconventional...
I'm
all over the place. That's where I should be.
Okay,
that's lovely.
No, right, start the
number
show again.
Number three, funny old shops.
Funny old shops.
And number four, unlikely records your parents liked.
We're going to leave these riding till Friday because I haven't given much. I didn't tweet about them much, so I think a lot of people are hearing that for the first time. But any subject we've ever done, you know, the door remains open, or even make your own.
Yeah, we've got a few of those.
You can tell we're not nailing this down every episode. What you got there, Peps?
Well, I'm going to go straight into unlikely records your parents liked, and this is from Andy. My mum had an extensive collection of records by the middle-of-the-road crooners, Johnny Mathis, Andy Williams, Matt Monro, etc. On the plus side, this got me into Scott Walker via his 70s budget albums. On the minus, it stretched as far as Des O'Connor, which to me was clearly too far.
No.
But every so often, she caught wind of a novelty single that, to her, took her fancy, and she came home with Running Away by Sly and the Family Stone or Sound and Vision by Bowie.
Oh!
The ultimate example being Rupee Edwards' dub hit, Irie Feelings.
Irie Feelings, of course, on the Cactus label. Yes, a scanner.
Which she bought and played a lot.
Wow.
Sadly, she then went back to the norm rather than exploring the works of King Tubby or Burning Spear, but it was fun while it lasted. On the other hand, my dad only listened to two things, Brass Band Records and Blaster Bates.
Blaster Bates,
what
man.
What a household.
I'm not going to take issue with everyone's musical taste when they send in an email. Let me put it another way. I'm going to take issue with everyone's musical taste when they send in an email. If you put my arm up my back, you don't even have to do that, and said, if you had to remove one of these artists from your life, you'd never hear again, would it be Scott Walker or Des O'Connor? I'll go with Des. I'll keep
Des. You retained
Des? I'd never cared for Scott Walker. Never. The albums always seem tremendously overwrought, and I can't do with all that sub-operatic gloom. I can't. Des O'Connor had a big hit with Jim Dale's Dick a Dum Dum. Now you're talking. Dick a Dum Dum. Do you know Dick a Dum Dum?
Dick a Dum Dum,
a Dick a Dum Dum, a Dick a Dum Dum. Take that, Scott Walker, and by extension, Bowie. Anyway, Dick a Dum Dum, big hit, big swinging, okay. Great hit. Jim Dale wrote loads of great songs, Georgie Girl and all that. Dick a Dum Dum, I've seen Jim Dale's one man show, and he was sending this demo out that he planned to write lyrics for, but in lieu of the lyrics, he just did what the guitar lick would be doing while he was doing it. And so he started singing Dick a Dum Dum, Dick a Dum Dum, Dick a Dum Dum.
No way.
The demo went out and it was recorded like that, and it became a big hit.
So that was the placeholder.
That was the placeholder, yeah. But it was supposed to be showing how he was going to dub another guitar going like Johnny Cash, and it became Dick a Dum Dum. Look at other podcasts.
Paul McCartney yesterday was. Uncomfortable.
What's the matter? What's the matter?
It must be my ears. I sound like I can't hear myself.
You can't hear yourself.
That's okay. All right.
You see, that's it. When Phil goes away, it all falls down.
It all falls down.
Fellas in there are taking a smoke. Anyway, but go on, Peps.
Didn't he call it scrambled eggs or something?
Oh yeah. It was scrambled eggs. Yesterday was scrambled eggs. But so you're going to get other podcasts contrasting Dick a Dum Dum with the entire oeuvre of Scott Walker. Irie Feelings. That was a real pick out. Did you see the weird thing about you, Peps? Is you your parents would have listened to records that I listened to. I forget how much
we were
younger.
Now, my parents were born in the late 40s. They were born in 47, so they're a bit older than you. So they...
Yeah.
Oh, so sorry. Right, I'm with you now.
Yeah.
We were a Motown household.
Yeah.
A bit of Beach Boys.
My parents were not... They didn't play many Motown records. They did. He liked Barry White later on in his life, my dad. I like him. He found his size amusing as well. But from our friend Tim. And this is extraordinary things seen in the cinema or the As Your Father. So, here we go. Way back in December 1986, the Regal Cinema in Skipton, where my dad took me, the 10-year-old me, to see Transformers, the movie.
Oh, a classic.
Have you seen that?
No.
No, this is a sub...
I think all boys my age would go, oh, classic.
No, I don't see. No, I'm trying to get through these, you know. There's a sub category here. Children's films you've suffered as a parent. Now, these days, the bar is high. These days, the bar is very high.
Excuse me, I went to Paw Patrol Race to the Rescue this week.
Did you?
That's an hour of my life I'm never getting back.
Did the little one enjoy it?
He loved it. And we had quite a temper tantrum when he turned around and went, can I have it again?
Did he?
Because he thinks he's at home where telly just comes on demand.
Well,
I had to really explain that don't happen at the cinema. So.
I saw two terrible films when Sonny was younger. He was a big fan of, there was Mario Brothers, the film, which Bob Hoskins took the money and run in. And that even he didn't think that was very good. He didn't think that. And I sat all the way through and at the end of it, I said, do you enjoy it? He went, some of it. I remember him saying that. And there was a film of a very short-lived toy range called Spawn. It was really rotten, and he stood on his tiptoes at the box office because you had to be like 10 or something to get into it. And it was, I do apologize, Tim's telling us his story.
Sorry.
And Spawn, I could always tell when later on I bought the video of it for him, and it remained on his shelf. And that said more than Mark Kermode ever could. Here we go. 1986, Regal Cinema Skipton. My dad took the 10-year-old me to see Transformers the movie. Into the Saturday matinee we went, in the quite large auditorium that was barely half full. I found my favourite spot, halfway up the cinema, in the middle. That's very good, 10 years old, to have a place in the cinema.
Yeah, makes sense.
Fourth row back, me. What about you?
I'd be with him, actually.
There's loads of people sitting there, and then you've got people eating sweets behind you, loads of people coming and going in front of you. Halfway up
is a risk of a crick neck at the fourth row, though.
Wait.
It's a risk of a crick net.
No,
some
it isn't.
Of them.
Fourth row is perfect. Fourth row is all civilised people agree on that. Anyway, here we go. Halfway up the cinema in the middle, it offered the best view of the film I've been waiting for ages to see. All right, this is Transformers the movie. So my dad soon grew a bit chilly and said he was off to find a warmer spot. And so if I was okay, I could stay right where I was. And so off he went. I was engrossed in the film and offered a barely distracted nod. Away went Dad. The film continued for what seemed like hours to the 10-year-old me, but was probably only about 20 or 30 minutes or so. And I noticed an usherette walking up and down the aisles. She usually offered ice cream, but she wandered into the cinema, worked her way down the rows until she turned her torch and started going right to the end of row C to speak to someone slumped against the wall. Of course, it was the old man. In his search for warmth, he'd found a spot next to a radiator and got so comfortable he'd fallen asleep where his snoring had started raising complaints. Being a 40-year-old man, seemingly on his own, falling asleep in the middle of a children's film in the cinema, must have played on his conscience. So he returned to his seat next to me and watched the rest of the film. Now, my old man was absolutely always falling a kip in films. Ice Station Zebra, Spring and Port Wine. You want to go to pictures, boy? I'd say, yeah. And he'd sit there, because he'd have a couple before we went in. And then he'd go into the pictures, and barely would the titles be over with.
Oh, no.
And I would stand. Oh, yeah, go on. And of course, eventually someone would turn around and go, could you pack that up? And my old man would say, can you pack you up in a minute? Dad, it's somewhat affecting the. He used to say, I'll pack you up in a minute. Whatever he said, he could turn it round and do it like that. So, apologies. Have we got someone on the phone yet? Or should we keep working our way through these? Here we go. Here we go. Give us something over there, Peps, and we'll do this.
Cool. This is Ross in Lincolnshire. Everyone has a tale to tell the treehouse, and this is mine.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it doesn't fit into any of your open subjects. It may have come up in the past and I've missed it.
Not myself. I'm coming up with 35 subjects a week. There you go. Go on then.
And in case I miss it, should it come again in the future, this is my subject. I knew I shouldn't have touched this.
Oh, brilliant. Well done. Well done,
bless
my
him.
Friend.
He said put it on a pile to await that topic. Okay. But we'll let him
that's
create
open
it
now.
All of his
that
own.
Is open right now. Go on.
Many years ago, I was temping in the City of London and got a gig at a major auction house in St James's. If you think of the major one, this was the other one.
Oh. So is Christie's superior to Sotheby's or is it the other way
say,
around?
How does one tell? One of those two. Anyway.
I would say gold Sotheby's, silver Christie's.
Yeah.
Anyway, never mind.
There goes our sponsorship. Yeah. I was shown into a back office, empty aside from a chair, a desk, a phone on the floor, a couple of sheets of discarded A4, and hanging in the corner, a small brown oil painting of a woman.
Oh.
Vaguely interested in paintings and knowing absolutely nothing, I cast my eye across it. Unencumbered by a velvet rope, I got really close to appreciate the brushwork and the confident application of the oils. And it was at this point, knowing I shouldn't have, I laid my greasy mitts upon it. I even had a little scratch. That done, clicked my tongue, said, modern Dutch, and carried on with my work. An hour and a bit
modern
later,
Dutch.
A besuited cove wanders in and says, asks if I mind him showing a potential buyer the painting on the wall.
Ooh, okay.
In walked a person who I can only assume was a sheik. They sat themselves in front of the work and gazed reverently, and the next words sent a chill to my toes. And there it is, sir. The Rembrandt.
No.
I knew I shouldn't have touched it.
He did a little scratch. This Balin Leonard, whom God preserve, I used to broadcast with, I was doing Have You Ever Broken Anything in an Art Gallery or Museum? And I think it was Balin. He saw a painting and he thought, it looks still wet. And he limped forward and touched it. Of course, it was dry as a bone. But as he took his finger away, there on the end was a flake of paint.
Oh.
Little flake of paint. And he estimated the painting, I don't know where he got the figure, was worth about $500,000. So he had about 25 quid there, right on. He said, it was only a speck, but he didn't know what to do with it. He thought, this is proper 17th century oils. And he walked around for ages like it was okay on the end of his finger. We will do that as well. People who have, okay. No one's talking to me, I'm just saying, oh, okay. Here's an advert.
Pack it up.
I'll pack you up in a minute. So, what you got over there, Peps?
Well, we've got Chris on the line.
Oh, great. It's Chris, our friend Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Hello, Chris. Have you ever fallen asleep in the cinema, Chris?
No.
No. Are you, did your dad ever fall asleep in the cell? I know I'm putting you on the spot here. Poor Chris had taken some time.
My dad probably would have fallen asleep in the cinema,
undoubtedly. It was a regular feature, and a lot of our listeners were finding out. Why are you tugging our coat, Chris?
It's a story about your son about holidays and not going away too far on holiday.
A couple of weeks ago, we were asking, what's the shortest distance anyone's ever travelled to go on holiday? What have you got?
Well, it's not exactly the shortest distance on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But what they did was they lived in a town called called West Molesey in
Who
Surrey.
Oh, I know West Molesey.
Yeah, I know. He was on the One Show.
No, that was the old 6 o'clock show. We did something about the battle between East and West Molesey.
That's the one, yeah. And you stood and said to the vicar, and the vicar said to you, West Molesey, in East Molesey, it's a digging implement, and in West Molesey, it's a blick and shovel.
Yes, he did. Yeah, that's the kind of thing. I believe the 6 o'clock show and The Ascent of Man are television's two greatest achievements. So here you are in West Molesey. So did you go to East Molesey on holiday? Is that it?
No. They never went to East Molesey. Better than that. They went to Southsea.
Who's they? Is this your parents?
Mum and dad.
About 60 miles away. My mum and dad, yeah.
That's a good distance. Okay, 60 miles.
Yeah, but I mean, years ago, because they'd have to go on the coach or the train, they didn't have a car.
Mm-hmm.
So if they was out about an holiday, they would go on a coach trip.
What do you mean?
Remember years ago, you used to have a mystery coach trip?
Yes, you do. The magical mystery tour. I don't know if they still operate mystery tours.
I've never seen one.
They used to be extraordinarily popular. I suppose they're a bit weird now. You get on a coach, but you don't know where you're going. It sounds a lot of fun. Yeah, so they got on a mystery tour, yeah?
I went on a mystery tour. I'd had a day trip on a mystery tour.
Mm-hmm.
And the mystery tour took them to Hampton Court.
Oh,
literally.
What's that about? How far away is Hampton Court?
It's in East Molesey.
Oh, is it?
Is it? Pretty much,
I did not. I have no wonder whenever I've had a seance and I've got Henry on the speakerphone, he always says Hampton Court was my home. He never says East Molesey. I didn't know it was in East Molesey, Hampton Court.
Yeah, it's Hampton. You look at the address of Hampton Court Palace, it's Hampton Court Way, East Molesey.
Did they pop home for a cuppa?
So they went on holiday and they went back to where they live and they used to push right there every morning on the way to work.
Oh, Chris, thank you so much. That's a belter.
Go on holiday and have a magical mystery tour back home.
Back home again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, bless you, my friend. Thank you very much indeed.
Can I, you were saying about the dogs as well.
What dogs?
The dogs that understand the story.
No. This was a controversial thing a few weeks ago, and I still have it. The dogs don't understand music. And some people say they do. You should see them. No, they don't.
They do.
Go on anyway.
If I play football with the dog, our dogs, in the garden.
Yeah.
And if how long, like the twit that I am, I'd sort of do the dum 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 a match of the day. And I'd be dum while I'm playing with it.
Then
I'd sit in the lounge and the dog would be sitting there. I think, oh, it's about time the dog had some exercise. So I start going da 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 da. The dog would run out into the garden and start playing with the football.
Yeah, but see, in the dog's mind, no, don't get me wrong, I'm a dog lover all my life. And I own some of the dumber dogs ever trot out of a pet shop, and I find them amusing like that. But it's just like they know their name, but they don't speak English. You know, when you do it, they hear. I saw a great card once, and it was an owner saying, "Do you want to go out? How about we go out? We go down the woods with your ball." And it said, "That's in the first caption." That was it in his speech bubble. We'll get your ball. I'll get my coat and we'll go out. We'll have a nice walk. And then it had the next caption: "What the dog hears." And there was just a load of scribble there. I know, is it? There's certain things they recognise, like smells, but believe me, when you're doing Match of the Day, don't think, I wonder who Gary's got on tonight, I wonder if City will be the... He actually thinks that usually means something good, but unless anyone, and the professor comes up with anything else, dogs do not understand music. I don't think so. They don't dance. They do. Actually, they do. They dance, but they don't understand music. And I've been out with at least 5 girls who fit that description as well, I'm afraid. They don't. I'm sorry, I did. I mean, I used to be a real bore for that. I took a girl to see Isotope once. I'm not saying they're wrong. Isotope, you wouldn't know, but Isotope made Gentle Giant look like plain sailing. And I took a girl to see Yes, and all she wanted to do was go to see the Motown Review, quite rightly. And she fainted at a Yes concert, right?
She did. She pretend to?
No. Rick Wakeman's sparkly cape at the Rainbow in London. And she slumped onto the wall and then sank down. It was standing room only. It's absolutely true. And I thought, you know, 15-year-old, she doesn't get music. Oh, she got it only too well, and she liked to dance, though. And we went outside, and the Rainbow Theatre used to have a fountain in the lobby, oh. An actual fountain, which is a beautiful old it's Moorish theme it used to be.
Oh, okay.
This fountain, and I took her out and sat on the fountain while they're halfway through, you know, close to the edge. And I spread water on her face because she was all groggy. Rick Wakeman's glittering coat made her pass out. No, it did. It did. You know, like on shows when they say...
Can that be a title one week? Rick... It's glittering coat.
But you know, like when they say on television it may contain flushing.
Oh, it had triggered.
And she went... And we sat on the thing while I'm thinking, oh, I'm missing, you know, Fragile and stuff.
You're right there.
But she came to and she walloped me right round the face and said, don't you ever do this to me again. So that was the end of me trying to say, you don't understand music, my dear. She understood music perhaps better than I. What you got there, Peps?
This is from Stuart. I didn't realise who I was talking to.
Ah.
When I was living in Sydney a few years back, I was staying with my horrible in-laws in Blackheath, a small town in the Blue Mountains.
Oh.
Blackets. I can call them whatever I like now. They're not my in-laws anymore.
So many of them.
I've replaced them with nicer ones.
We've got so many bitter correspondents. Yeah.
Anywho, wishing to extricate myself from their presence for a while, I pretended to be enthusiastic about taking their dog for a walk. Off I set, grumbling away to myself to the nearest park. On the way out of the park were two young kids and a bloke who I assumed was their parent. And the kid asked the parent if they could pat the dog. And he asked me if that was okay. And sure, I replied, she's more scared of them than her, etc, etc. Spot of not successful non-bitey dog fussing ensued and everyone passed along with thanks and farewells. It was only as they were turning to leave that I actually took a look at who I'd been talking to.
Go on.
Tom Cruise.
No. No, it now all comes.
Turns out him and Nicole, showing how long ago this was, used to rent a posh house in Blackheath whenever they were home in Sydney, because of course that's where she's from.
Oh, of course she is. Yes, she is.
It was too late to say anything like, fancy a pint?
Wow.
Cheers, says Stu.
It's because I'm forgetting she's Australian.
Yes.
I'm forgetting. You know, I could never warm to her. And she's not going to lose any sleep about that. I might as well take her to see Isotope because she's got tiny teeth. Really little teeth. Yes, she has. You ever look at Nicole Kidman's teeth? They're like a baby's teeth.
Never noticed.
No, you ever look. If you look, when she smiles, there they are, hundreds of them. But honestly, they're so little. And it would be like one of Seinfeld's girlfriends, you know, just thinks, I can't. Other people have said, oh, no,
teeth.
She's tiny. Honestly, hundreds and hundreds of tiny teeth. They sparkle, but they're way too small. Okay, this is... This is from our friend Michael. Oh, this is a belter. This is this is kind of a record your parents got hold of it in a different way. Years ago, my dad worked for a small haulage company and delivered goods through London and the South East. His previous role working in a tea warehouse along the River Thames meant he knew quite a few dockers and would often arrive home with a delivery from the Royal Docks, items that were probably, you know, much cheaper than in the shop, if you get my drift.
Oh, I do.
Anyway, but they never quite fitted the bill, a 12-string guitar that was impossible to tune and play, a left-handed fishing reel for my right-handed brother, as well as loads of boots polish and ladies' cosmetics, because he'd often visit those factories too. But during the early 70s, early and mid-70s, my dad also delivered records. Now we're talking, fellas.
Hey, kids,
gather in, ladies and gentlemen. He also delivered records and promotional items to record shops. I'd often go out in his van during the school holidays, and I think this is where my love of vinyl began, as I'm a big record collector too. Yeah, well, I'll be the judge of that. I'm haunted by what I could have got my hands on as a kid. Bowie, Zeppelin, T-Rex, Nick Drake, Genesis, etc. I'll never know, because the only record I ever got excited about back then was Walt Disney's LP of The Runaway Train, which was given to me by a friendly shop owner. However, we did end up with a box of 30 or so copies of Curtis Mayfield's first LP on the Buddha label. Mint copy of that these days, about 75 quid if he's interested, he is. Over the years, this fine record was given away to anyone who wanted one. In its time, different copies of it would have been used as a frisbee, sprayed gold and hung on my bedroom wall with my name on it, ready for the inevitable day when I'd be a multi-million selling artist as well. One evening in the early 80s, my sister Alison ran upstairs to our flat and asked if there was any left, as she needed some copies to pay a minicab fare. It turned out the driver was a fan, and getting copies was very, very difficult. Over the time the copies dwindled, I sold the last few on a stall in Greenwich Market when I was hard up. And I gave a member to each member of my band in the 90s. Well, that's 25 copies over the years. That's not so bad. I don't know if it's worth telling, because I used to do it in the stage show, the first one. My dad did, for a brief period, got records at the docks. Pretty good ones, is it? Mainly on CBS. And this is worth sticking with. If you don't, you'll be most, I think, people have heard me tell this story. I don't even do Peps. And what I used to do, he'd bring them home. And at the age of 10 and 11, I would get the train up to Whitechapel, on the underground train, and walk down Petticoat Market and sell the copies, the extra copies, to the stall holders. They all got to know me. And, of course, what would I do with the money? Buy more records with it. You go out with more records and you just come home with more records and you just take out. But I did that for about 18 months. They all knew me, they knew the copies were good. But one time he came home with a box, 25 LPs in it, of a group called The Human Beast. Now, I'm telling the Human Beast story. Now, I knew all about rock music, never heard of The Human Beast. I've got to tell you, nobody's ever heard of The Human Beast. I was pretty flexible in what I liked, Peps. Mm. But I put this on, and even to my 11-year-old ears, this was caterwauling of a high order. One track per side, and it was just the most ridiculously, you know, pretentious nonsense of people who wanted to be psychedelic but didn't have a clue how to do it, the Human Beast. And it became a running gag amongst all my friends, the Human Beast. So any bad record, is that the Human Beast? So what did I do with these 25 copies? Took them over, stall holders, took one each to see how it goes. A few weeks later, said, you can have that one back. So I had these 25 copies. So we went over to we lived near a bomb site, as you did, and we started using them as targets. We'd put them there and we'd back off and we'd try and get as near to the hole in the middle as we could. We'd throw them up in the air just like our friend. They're like clay pigeon shooting, bang. We'd do all these things with them, and even the cover became a gag, you know, and it's gone. If ever you these days find yourself at loose end, Peps, go onto a site called Discogs, which is the big record selling site. Look up The Human Beast. The last copy of their album to sell on Discogs, £1,700 it went for. It is apparently a lost psych classic.
No wonder it's lost.
I, on that dump, shot up approximately £25,000 worth of early 70s psychedelia. And it did, honestly, it's an absolutely true story. I had 25 copies in a box. And they say it's, you know, there's not many copies around. I know why. I know why, because Tommy Hodges was a lousy shot and went through track one before he got near the label. So thank you very much indeed, Michael, for allowing me to tell that again. We've got someone on the phone?
Yes, we've got Andy.
Hey, Andy.
Oh, hi, Dan.
How are you doing, Andy? Thank you very much for being there. I like the dramatic pause before anything
and
happens.
And then, oh, hi.
Yeah, good for you, passing. Andy. Andy, have you ever fallen asleep in the cinema?
I have, yes.
Yeah, me and me too. The film Coma, yes, I promise you, I fell asleep in the film Coma. Everyone reminds me of that. Well, what have you fallen asleep during, do you know, Andy?
We go quite a lot, and there are various things that I do tend to nod off in. I can't really remember the last time.
It depends if you have a dinner and a bit of wine before, and it's the devil's own job. It doesn't matter what it is. I think it could be.
Yeah, nice comfy seat and dark cinema. It's
Avatar, I think I nodded off.
You went off to do an Avatar?
Well,
I've never seen that.
It's about 4 hours long.
Is it?
Oh, man.
Oh, no. Well, I'll tell you what, you and Andy one day, we'll have a good old lunch and we'll have a nice kip in the Odeon, Leicester Square. Why are you tugging our coat, Andy? What's the story?
Well, relating to cinemas and peculiar things you've seen in them, I'm going back to the 1979. I was 12 years old, and we'd not long moved to a small village in Wiltshire, so there was not much in the way of entertainment going on. But we did have a cinema in our nearest town in Westbury called the Vista Cinema.
Oh, well, lovely.
And, It was probably a really lovely cinema in years gone by, but it was definitely past its best. And it was a fleep it,
as they call
and
them, yeah.
It used to only show soft porn. to put it bluntly.
Oh, if only I had my sleazy music here. By the way, while you and I are talking, today in history, a new descending a staircase came. And have a look at that on the internet if you like. 1911, Duchamp painted nude descending a staircase. So there it is. You've got this flea pit.
Specialist tastes.
Yeah, exactly, Shane.
He did a bit of bingo, I think, from time to time. But yeah. I think it definitely seen better days. Anyway, yeah. For some strange reason, we noticed one time driving past that it was showing Moonraker, the Bond film, yeah. which was released that year, 79. Uh-huh. And me and my dad thought, oh, yeah, we ought to take advantage of that, go and see that. You know, mm-hmm. I often get the chance to see a film without going a bit further afield. So we went off there, very tentatively stepped inside. It was definitely a flea pit. You knew that as soon as you walked in the door. Mm-hmm. Went upstairs, sat in the auditorium. There was probably no more than about 15 or 20 others in there, mm-hmm. including at the back, a couple of rows of these really leery, beard-up lads. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the film started. We got about halfway through, I think, and these lads were getting more and more obnoxious.
Rowdy.
You know, cheering at every appearance of a Bond girl with next to nothing.
Well, mind you, the reputation of the cinema goes before it in that particular. So, yeah.
You're right. But so this got so out of hand that the film ground to a halt. We were all looking around, what's going on? And then the manager came into the auditorium up the aisle with two massive, great German shepherds on the stage. Barking
good for
snarling
him.
At, you know, really champing at the bit.
Guantanamo Bay.
So it's as a way of a threat to these lads up the back. Mm-hmm. I think there was a certain amount of bravado going on to begin with. All right then. But eventually they quietened down.
He took
the dogs away, and the film resumed.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, if he's supposing he's used to showing, you know, nudes of 1964 or whatever his latest... the film when I was young, we all tried to get into and couldn't, was called 17. That was the big one. You couldn't get into that. But if he's used to that kind of crowd, of course he's got two German shepherds there. Because shouting out is only one of the problems, I guess, he gets with groups of men in there. And he walks up the aisle, Ross, you'll be quiet. You'll watch the Bond film. Well, thank you very much indeed, my friend.
Oh.
And enjoy your snooze next time you're, of course, knocking around in.
Indeed.
One more over there, perhaps someone will be around.
This is Alan from Saltaire. This is knocking a while back about names you gave your toys.
We had some teams
and things. Many years back, when my boys were youngsters, we had several Sabutio teams that we used to play quite regularly. As is the norm, several players got knelt on and arms and legs would disappear and a goalkeeper who was dislodged. There was one goalkeeper who had become dislodged from the rest of his injured team. Mm. So my son Jonathan, unbeknownst to me, stuck blue tack in the shape of a wig on his goalkeeper's head and said, "Look, Lord Justice Taylor."
No. Lord Justice Taylor. Having a Sabutio. See, I never liked Sabutio. And I thought I knew where that was going, you know.
Wasn't it?
Oh, it's a massive ball. What do you need the players for? The magnetic football you used to play.
I used to like being the keeper.
That was brilliant. No. I think it would have piqued even my interest in the game had... They brought out the Law Justice Taylor 11 with little judges all over it. Well, I think we're pretty much done.
We could probably squeeze another one in.
You want to get another? I'm talking on behalf of the audience.
Oh.
Go on. What you got there, Peps?
A message from beyond the grave.
Oh, okay. One minute. Let me find. There's my message from beyond the grave thing. Okay.
This is from Rob.
Yeah.
I'm getting in touch to tell you a small but true tale of a message beyond the grave, even though it's not on your subject list again.
Mm-hmm. That's all right, go on, Tom. Mm-hmm.
My dad sadly passed away 6 years ago in December, just after his 79th birthday. A sad time for us all. After the funeral in January, the family got to get together to discuss the spreading of the ashes. And my father had had many favourite places and we decided to sprinkle him in as many as possible. Mm. My turn was to take him to Sheringham in Norfolk, a seaside town often visited by my parents.
They can disperse him.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Have you heard Jay Rayner's story about what he did with...
Yes, I did see that. And,
yes.
Similarly. They dispersed. I've never heard of this before. Forgive me for interrupting there. But I didn't know that was
a thing. Oh, no, my late sister-in-law Tess left a list of where she'd like to, places she'd never got to before she passed away. She's been all around the world, little bits.
See, I'd worry that in, like, I don't know, they find out how to put us back together again in like 5 years' time or something.
Yeah, poor Tess has got one arm up the Alps.
That's what I'm going to say. And they, you come back and you look like Mr. Potato Head. But sorry, so they're going to be dispersed.
Yeah. Dad used to love watching the fishing boats go out. So me and my wife thought the perfect place would be on the beach. After saying a few words and shedding a few tears, we set off back to the cottage, laughing that Dad wouldn't be too happy being scattered right near the sea as he'd never learnt to swim. On entering the cottage, we put the kettle on and I stopped in my tracks as I looked at my phone and I was receiving a call from Dad. I looked at my wife. Man. She looked at me. We stared at the screen in horror. Yeah. Dad was calling.
Man alive.
I answered the phone and heard my mum say, "Hello, love, did you spread the ashes?"
Why
did the phone say Dad? Nice and calm, my mum said, "Well, Dad still had credit left on his phone, so I'm using it up."
Oh, my Lord.
I thought my dad was going to tell me off from afar for putting him too close to the sea, but it was just mum using up credit.
Oh, man.
God bless him.
That is a tremendous dilemma. You've got plenty of credit. I speak to someone who barely understands the concept. You've got plenty of credit left on a phone, but it's someone who's passed on's phone. Is that righteous? I think it might be righteous.
Who else did she ring?
Man, we'll just try this.
Good morning, everybody. It's the Danny Baker Show. Radiating out across the airwaves. Come the sunshine or the rain, come aboard the Danny train. We'll kick our slippers off and throw our cares away. What better thing to do than have a jolly jape or two? Don't touch that dial, there's nowhere else to go. Come and join a happy session, wave ta-ta to the recession on the Danny Baker Show.
Take it away. Always do, Wisby. And again.
Climb up, go in, let's cozy down. Wave goodbye to that silly frown as we chase our cares away. In the treehouse, the fire's on, it's warm inside. We guarantee you'll be satisfied as we laugh the day away. In the treehouse,
take it away, Danny.
It's that man again. Thank you very much indeed. It was Ollie and Gully looking after the show today, and everyone here at Something Else Who Gives Us the Platform. Of course, that's Louise Pepper co-hosting on the other side of the table. But as always, it's chiefly yourselves. I had 2 bottles of wine last night before I went to bed.
Really?
Yeah, I think it might have affected the performance.
Oh no, you carry that off well.
Did I? Mm. Okay. Well, I'll get up and go now with the drunk music playing. I think. You have to see you Saturday, everyone.
Are you ready for truly hydrated skin? Meet Hyaluronic Body Serum, a breakthrough in body care from Osea. It's clinically proven to instantly increase hydration by 161%. Their lightweight, fast-absorbing serum delivers 24 hours of nonstop hydration for silky, smooth skin without the sticky afterfeel. Osea's latest innovation combines the magic of their best-selling Hyaluronic C Serum with a new formula that's good for the whole body and 5 types of hyaluronic acid to target every layer of the skin. Osea is a woman-founded, women-led brand that's been crafting seaweed-powered products for nearly 30 years. The best part? Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.